This podcast is a member of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts and content creators, visit bio.link/red5.
For an entire generation, people have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible, on the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
This is where the fun begins.
Chewie, we're home.
Hello there.
We would be honored if you would join us.
Welcome to the Blue Mill Cafe. Grab an empty stool at the counter, order a cup of Jawa juice and a nice slice of Yogan fruit pie, and get ready, because we're about to talk all things Star Wars.
Good morning, Mos Espa, and welcome back into the cafe. This is episode 164. I'm your host, Jeff.
And if Luke from Star Wars Sessions was to scramble my name, I would be Full Alarm Boy.
Back this week, and got good news. I am all caught up on the Bad Batch, so we are putting our Mandalorian way back on pause until season 3 of the Bad Batch comes to an end. And we found, we're at a good stopping point for the Mandalorian. We were just about to start season 3, episode 1, so we're at that good stopping point. And we are going to pick up and we are going to do the Bad Batch season 3, episode 1 this week. And we're just going to do like we do with our way back with Mandalorian. We're going to go episode by episode and go through it. And, Real Farm Boy going to walk us through each episode. And I'll be, making my comments on certain things here and there. So, Episode 1, and the screen just went black on me, so I did not see the name of the episode.
Combined.
Okay, yes, that's because we open up with, we all know where Omega and Crosshair were at the end of 2. They're as prisoners. Well, they don't consider Omega a prisoner, but let's face it, she is. She can't go anywhere on her own. So,
yes, sir. This is going to be about... there's been a few months past since Hemlock and his... I'm kind of hesitant to call them clone commandos because Lucasfilm has showed us, even from season 2, when we were seeing... formerly Republic Commandos, they put out some concept art that was renamed Imperial Royal Guards. Sort of off to the right or left, but in the same relation to what we're familiar with Royal Guards, with the red cloaks and the red helmets. Yeah, they are referred to, if the concept art's calling them that, everybody else is still referring to them as commandos. So now I'm not rightly sure. Maybe it's Cross, you can consider them both, but yeah. Where Omega was taken, she's already been on Tantus at the beginning of this for I want to say it's 2 or 3 months, because as it goes through the first one or two episodes, she's been marking her time sort of in relation to the way that Rey did spend all her time on Jakku. Okay. Yes, just up, we get to see a formerly Republic, which is now Imperial, shuttle. It's a new class shuttle, and you, of the three different variations of shuttles, coming in to the atmosphere of Wayland in a real thunderstorm.
Yeah.
Rain's whipping all over. This, just the animation on this is just, it is gorgeous. Jeff and I were talking pre-record, pre-show, about, to me, when I'm watching, we're just up, like Jeff said, finished episode 7. We're about sitting more or less halfway through. How are we halfway through the season already? Yeah, it looks just like live action to me. It might as well be.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this shuttle's coming in and not carrying, insofar as we can tell, anybody of particular interest. There's a pilot and a few TK troopers aboard. And the shuttle's making, giving comms that they're on course, headed to Tantus Base, flying through the storm, and all of a sudden it takes a strike from lightning. And it's going down. They're not good shape. Pilot's doing his dead level best to try to get the rest of the way, but doesn't quite make it. And he puts down in what looks to be a heavily forested jungle. Looks like a mix of both a forest and a jungle.
Yeah.
Rain's beaten down, and they drop the ramp. Yeah, four TK troopers were aboard. And they realize they're a fair piece away from Tantus Base.
And all of a sudden, as my wife put it, they find themselves in Jurassic Park.
Agreed. More or less. There's some really not friendly sounding beasts out there.
Yeah.
So then we get a shot at one of the comm stations in Tantus Base with very strange that they have what looks like Imperial gunners, which I'm assuming are also doubling as communications technicians at the comm station. And they're receiving more or less a distress call from these TK troopers asking for assistance because the shuttle is downed outside the safety perimeter of Tantus Base. And Dr. Hemlock appears and hears these comms and what they're asking for somebody to come retrieve them.
All right.
Why hasn't the shuttle arrived yet?
Yeah, we can just share this right here. Yeah, they're in a tight spot.
If they're asking for anything, they're as good as dead.
So that's pretty heartless of Hemlock.
Yeah, he's so compassionate. So, but yeah, just shuts the comms off on them and says they're good as dead. Just leave them. Because he cares so much for his men. But. Yeah,
it's putting them about the same level that he was looking at clone troopers.
Yeah, mostly. Well, more than likely, yeah.
Now, this is coming from an Imperial loyalist. I would not be one to supporting anything in relation to Dr. Hemlock.
Yeah, he's... doing a great job. The voice actor's doing a great job of making the viewer do what they're supposed to do with his character and hate his guts.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, he is doing a great job. And one of my new new favorite Star Wars villains just because the ones that I like the most are the ones that I hate the most when I'm watching it. So, because they're doing their job. That's what you're supposed to make a viewer do.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Yeah, he's a son of a bitch.
Yeah, and then we get to, I can't remember. We go from that and we go right in Omega Cell, I think, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Or quarters.
Yeah.
She would see it as a cell.
Yeah. It's her room.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and even as we go along here at the beginning of the episode, we're going to see time does pass. Because there's, I know I'm jumping ahead, but there's one point where I told my wife, when I noticed it, I was like, I just, you know, casually said, I said, oh, I look Omega's ponytail. And I was like, wait a minute. When'd she get a ponytail? And I was like, oh my God. I said, more time has passed than we realize. So, and they did make her look a little bit more grown up too, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are through the first three episodes, there are three different, I want to say it's three. Listener friends, feel free to correct me if I might be wrong, but there's three different points that show the passage of time. One that gets up into, she's been there for 60 days, and then the second time is 120 days, and then I'll save the last for one for when we get to that point. I don't think it might turn up in this episode.
Yeah, because she's doing a ray, basically. She's keeping track of days, like waiting for her parents to show up, just like Ray was doing, waiting for her parents to show up, I meant to say. Yeah, just keeping a little tally. Counting the days down when she's going to make her escape.
Or if her brothers turn up to try to get her. One or t'other.
Eventually, I think she just got tired of doing that, but.
Yeah, we do get to see the monotony of days for her, how it's pretty much, how folks say nowadays is kind of rinse and repeat. Where
I can relate.
Me too. Same here. My girls kind of think for me, that sounds boring, Dad. I'm very routine.
Right.
And I have over many, many years schooled myself and been used to routine, and anything that takes me out of my routine, tries my patience a bit, although I got patience for light years. But yeah, we get to see how very routine this is for Omega, that Emery shows up in the morning, wishes her a good morning. The interesting little conversation at the very beginning, because this has to be in just the days or weeks that, I would say days, the first days that Omega is here. She's outfitted in an Imperial Sciences Division or Advanced Sciences Division research uniform. Sort of similar to what Emery's wearing. It's a little bit different from the ones that we saw. Well, they would be different because that's a different Imperial Advanced Division. Sort of like the one that Galen Erso was wearing on Edu. The colors are similar. Yeah, Omega's already not happy. She says she wants to leave. She feels like a prisoner. And Emery insists that she is not, no such thing. And she says it will take some time for her to get used to this, but she's going to be a part of this, whether she wants to or not.
Right.
So she reaches under her bunk and brings along what looks like a neat little lunch pail. I have one of my own that's a vintage thing. It's an old 1930s miner's tin that I take back and forth as my lunch pail for work. So they're going through the corridors. Can see some more of the other science division crew that I've heard kind of question Are they also, there's fellows and there's girls that look very similar to Emery. Are some of these also clones?
We don't know at this point. I'm assuming maybe yes, since they do have clones at the Ying Yang there at Tantus. So,
yeah, we were only ever introduced to one other that we haven't seen yet this season, and that's Dr. Scalder. She's the first one that Omega meets before we meet Emery.
Right.
Whose features are sort of similar. She wears her hair a bit different than Emery does. But her facial features are sort of similar. She wears the same eyepiece headset that Emery wears. And yeah, watching walking through the corridors, working on their data pads as they go about. Then we could see, as they're going through, coming the opposite way, are a group in single file of former clone soldiers, yeah, being led by commandos or royal guards. And they're looking pretty dejected. They're walking with a slump in their back and tired looks on their faces. And in this group is Crosshair. And Omega sees him. She doesn't say anything, but she's surprised to see him. Don't know that right off that he took notice of her. No, he did not. None of them did.
Because he's just, yeah, like the others. Look like he's been put through hell. So.
Mm-hmm. And where we sit right now, we kind of learned about that, but we'll get to that when we get to it. Yeah, we go into we're taken into a lab with Emery and Omega, and Emery's got a clone that's laid on one of the beds, and she's taking a blood sample from him. And she puts it into a tray with quite a few other blood samples. And she wants her to take these to Nalase, but first, Emery wants a sample also from Omega, and she promises that it won't hurt. And I think there is a little bit of a pinch to it, because looking at Omega's face as Emery takes the sample, I would think there's, to take a sample out of you, something's got to go into you to get it.
There's always a pinch. They always lie.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't like needles, so I'm with Omega. I don't care. Anytime someone puts a needle in me, I do wince a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I
mean, yeah, I've gotten better over the years. When I was a teenager and a kid, yeah, I made more of a fuss about it, but yeah, it always makes me wince a little bit. But
me too.
Oh, well.
Well, some of the little short talk in between, Omega's kind of, at least kind of happy to have the company of a sister.
Yeah.
Which, taking a quick look at Emery's response as Omega says this, I think Omega kind of touched something in her. Just a slight look of surprise on Emery's face.
Right.
So she sends Omega off with the tray of blood samples to go to a different lab in the base, and seeing some of the other traffic as she's walking by, there's Commando Royal Guards at nearly every door, no matter where she's going. So she enters this sort of an antechamber in between the outside corridor and Nalase's lab. The very interesting scanner, a four-way blue cross beam that comes down and scans her. So the security in this place is next level.
Yeah.
It's pretty secure. So we see her go into Nalase's lab, where Nala is an RA-7 droid with another tray of samples, and she's putting it into what looks to be a blood scanner. And it resembles the face of a clock. But instead of having 12 spots on it, this one has 10. And she takes the vials of blood and she puts it in and seals it in its little test chamber.
Yeah, I was going to, real quick here. Yeah, this thing that she's putting those in that have those 10 slots looks like a clock. I told my wife, because she used to be a phlebotomist. And so, you know, her favorite things are vampires, so she was able to call herself a vampire because she took people's blood. This thing kind of reminds me of what, you know, you guys had in your labs there called centrifuge. Because this thing, yeah, does eventually start turning, but not as fast as a centrifuge. But that kind of what it reminds me of. I said, I guess this is a Star Wars version of one, but of course it doesn't spin fast. It takes its time because it analyzing each blood sample as it gets to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's what it reminded me of.
Hmm. So then of the samples that Omega brought, when Emery took Omega's, she put it in a separate slot of the tray from all the other ones that she had. So it Omega's kind of stands out. And Nala says, notices this, that it's Omega's sample. And she doesn't put it into the clock face. Instead, she brings up the read-up, and we see an image of Omega on her computer monitor.
Yeah.
And then she takes Omega's sample, and she puts it into a disposal, which has Omega surprised. She's like, why'd you discard my blood sample? And Nalase says it's safer this way. She don't explain why.
Right.
And she also confides in Omega to not tell anyone that she did that. Yeah, now this has really got Omega's interest. She's straight up asked Nalase, this ain't like the research that we did on Kamino, is it? And she says, no, it is not.
Kamino, and I still have a hard time saying that word, weren't this devious, so.
No, there's, Nalase knows quite a bit. We don't know what that is yet, but now we get to see exactly what it is that's going on with testing these blood samples. We get a short little shot that's very interesting. A lot of folks have taken notice of this, that the short shot we're shown is one of the most recent sample that she put in has injected into it someone else's blood.
Right.
And this has had everybody that's keeping up and watching, thoughts and theories on whose blood was that was injected into this. It's just one quick little squirt.
Right.
And what is it that's being tested? Your thoughts, Jeff?
Well, I kind of know what it is now, but, when I first saw this episode, I honestly said to my wife, I said, well, they're testing their blood. And we've seen in other Star Wars shows, like in The Mandalorian, Grogu's blood. And why the heck would someone want Grogu's blood? Midichlorians. So I had an idea that they're testing somebody's blood that had a good level of midichlorians and trying to, I guess, find some maybe clones. But if the clones had it, that means they would have had to been made with it. So that, my theory for that went out the window.
Okay.
I don't really know what they're looking for, but obviously it's for something devious and they're going to try to create more clones. And it took me back to the Emperor's, his obsession with cloning.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, yep, this has something to do with Palpatine, and this is sort of the beginning of where he starts to, maybe this is wanting to try to clone himself. And he just wants blood from everything, you know, test all this blood, see if we could all like try to fuse it and put it on a clone and come up with a super clone or something. So, yeah, so, I don't know. I'm just all over the place sometimes.
No, you're on a particular path, and I think I'm sitting on the same path. My opinion, I think the sample of blood that was injected into the clone sample was Palpatine's blood, which would have a very high M count.
Right.
I know when these first three episodes were dropped, even back into season three of Mando and even season one of Mando, when we meet Dr. Pershing on Nevarro in the Imperial safe house, it was mentioned as M count. And then recently back 4 or 5 weeks ago now, when it was brought up here, a lot of folks I've heard on recaps and reviews are like, just say the word. Why are they saying M count when we know what it means? It's just a term that they're using, the storyteller's using. If that's how they want to use it, that's their story to tell. We know what it is.
Yeah, my argument for that is, even us, we use slang to refer to different things.
Ooh, well said.
Say all the entire word. Example, as a baseball fan, you're sitting around with your friends like I do. We start talking about baseball stats. I don't go, oh, do you see how many runs that guy had batted in? No, I say, you see how many RBIs he had? We just give things abbreviations. M count is short for midichlorian count. So, yeah, I don't know why people are just like, all bent out of shape. We know what it is. They're trying to disguise stuff. No, they're not. They know Star Wars fans are smart. We know what you're talking about. Maybe that's why they're doing it. They're not trying to deceive us. So,
that's a very good way of putting it, is kind of making it into a sort of slang words. I know a lot of youngins out there kind of take, which confounds me a little bit, is if we already have a word for a thing, why make a new word to explain that very same word? Where folks will say throne, and a lot of youngins take it and turn it into some word they made up called yeeted.
Yeah.
If you're going to say throne, just say throne.
Right.
That, again, just in my opinion, observation. If there's one word, just use that one word instead of making up a word that also describes the very same word. All
right,
that's enough word vomit from me. Back to the story. Yeah, Nala Se does straight up say that this isn't in relation to the clones. And then Hemlock makes an appearance to gather Nala Se.
Yeah.
along with, I want to say it's Commando, Royal Guard. I think that's Scorch, who seems to be Hemlock's right hand, where the troopers are involved. You know, he kind of urges Omega to carry on with her duties, and then we get to see the blood sample clock make its first turn, where it takes to the next sample. And then the story takes us out into the corridor, one of the corridors outside of Nalase's lab, where she and Scorch are escorting her into a new chamber that has Commando Royal Guard. It's loaded, so this is highly secure room. Hemlock takes some security device and opens a set of doors that show another corridor loaded with laser security laser gates. So it doesn't get any more secure than that. Whatever they're going to.
Yeah, this was
even outside. Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
As I say, this is right out of James Bond. A secure location like this just reminds me of something that would be in James Bond movie or a spy movie. But yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, anybody from the outside can have a hell of a time getting into this place.
Yeah. Then we get to the scene where doesn't matter if it's animation, but any little scene where an animal's being tortured, I have problems with. But yeah, just given, not sure if that was now I can't remember her name. The one that Omega ends up with.
Okay, we're taken in the story into, we're going to get to start to get familiar and meet some of the different wildlife that's on Wayland and in the forested jungles of Wayland. There's a kennel that has a new creature, sort of similar to, I've already heard folks say, well, we haven't really seen a Star Wars-ized version of a dog, and I would kind of counter back with, yeah, we have. We've seen Mastiffs.
Yep.
That are the sort of lizard kind of dogs on Tatooine that we've seen in Tusken Raider camps.
Yeah. Exactly.
They were also used by the Empire back in season 1 on Darrow when the Batch finds the transition in between clones and standard stormtroopers, where we meet TK troopers, where Gregor's is recaptured. When they run him down in the forest and stun him, the TK troopers are also using Mastiffs. So here we are introduced to, I'm sure it's kind of Star Wars doggo. It's called a Lurka Hound.
Okay. But, yeah, Omega names him Batcher. That's it.
And Batcher is a girl.
Yep.
Yeah, and their first encounter with one of them, maybe not first that we get to see. I think Omega's been at this in her routines. Yeah, she's feeding the Lurka Hounds with whatever kind of, I've heard folks refer to it as kibble of sorts. So they're a little scooper.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
In a big bucket of this stuff, and there's a little food slot that slides it down into their food cup, and they're gated into their kennels, and there's outside doors that lead them outside, and each of these Lurka Hounds is outfitted with a transmitter of sorts, kind of strapped around their neck and kind of fitted to the side of their head. So they're being controlled and kind of called in a sort of way. And yeah, just like Jeff said, there's one particular hound that takes Omega's fancy. She's trying to kind of be friends with. And she notices that, she calls her Batcher. She's not really interested in the kibble. So Amelia brings, she brought her lunch pail along with her, and she has, I would have to imagine, rations of sorts that she's given. She spends a couple minutes trying to talk with her, and notice she's not interested in the kibble, so she gives her a couple of her rations, which Thatcher's momentarily interested, maybe more so in the food and not so much the company.
Right.
Is Omega opposite to her, and Thatcher makes a run straight at the fence, or the fence door, and makes a jump at Omega, scares her, knocks her under her butt, but doesn't shake her up too much. She's pretty set on being friendly, whether Batcher wants to be friendly back or not.
Right.
So Batcher scoops up what she gave her, and she seems to be more interested in people food than work-at-home food. So she promises Batcher she'll be back to see her again. And she's got to have some sort of clearance. As she's making her way through, there's different TK troopers and commandos that are doing their rounds and don't seem to take any notice to Omega.
Oh.
No, so she's going through some corridors where clones are being held. And she knows exactly where she's going. She's going to the cell that has Crosshair.
Oh, yeah.
And she's sneaking her way through. She's trying not to be noticed so that she can come have this little chat. And she mentions to Crosshair, we gotta plan our escape. And Crosshair's in no way convinced. He seems entirely dejected.
Yeah.
He says, there ain't no we. He's tried.
Escape. So.
Yeah, he's tried a few times to no avail. Seems they've stopped him pretty quick. And she does notice that he's favoring his left hand.
Oh, yeah, shaking slightly at this point.
Yeah, he just urges her to, she's just going to make things worse. Just go. Interesting that, yeah, he watches her walk off. Kind of wonder at that moment, I think at that moment, a little bit of what she was trying to inspire him with, I wonder if a little bit of that stuck. That he watches her walk off and lays back down. Yeah, then we see her at the window of her quarters. And she's making the five hash marks, the four up and down and the fifth diagonal one. She's got a few on the window, the wall of her window. And it doesn't really have, it seems to be an open window with a screen of sorts.
Yeah.
The temperature outside on Tantus must be pretty average to be able to not have to have a completely sealed window. And while she was in the kettle, she'd been grabbing little handfuls of straw for some of the bedding for the Lurka hounds and kind of sneaking it away in her lunch pail. And we see what she's had in mind, that she takes that and some rawhide leather straps, and she makes herself her own Tuca doll, like Lulu.
Her doll.
Yeah, like Lulu that Wrecker gave her on the Marauder.
Yeah, and I did find on StarWars.com, and I saved the article because I told my wife, I said, when I, get bored, sometimes I said, I'm going to make one of these. She was like, what? And I'm like,
they show you how to make your own little straw doll, like a Mega.
A Duga.
So, yeah.
Yeah, when that turned up, that went, folks say, viral. Yeah, there. I saw a lot of different folks on the Twitterverse timeline setting to do the very same thing.
Yeah.
I want to say it was Kelly Knox. Kelly Knox does crafty sort of stuff like that. And she showed us on her timeline a quick little video of her putting hers together. Yeah, they're cute little things.
Yeah. Now we get to see the passage of time. Because there's her ponytail.
Yeah, this is where I was saying previously, it's sitting now about 120 days, or I want to say that would be, what is that, 4 months?
Yeah, just about, yeah.
Yeah, so now timeline-wise, past Order 66, we're going to be just sitting in the very early days of 18 years before the Battle of Yavin. So the Empire is already really reaching out into a pretty vast part of the galaxy. They've got a lot yet to go in 18 years. And kind of wondering, now that we're weeks ahead of this, some new things that are going to be additions to the Empire we have yet to see are what the Empire is using for starfighters right now are V-Wings. Leftovers and holdovers from the Clone Wars are going to be replaced somewhere in this 18 years before the Battle of Yavin. Excuse me. Are going to be TIE fighters. And then still kind of wondering by the time in weeks to come, TK troopers are going to be phased out and replaced with the very familiar, what we know as standard Imperial Stormtroopers. We'll see how that turns up, but just a couple little points of canon history that have been rattling around in RFB's head.
Right.
There's the passage of time and the routine of Omega's day, another morning, where after she's made her scratches in the window wall, and here's Emery at the door to her quarters, wishes her a good morning.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there, Omega's got to be sitting, my best guess, she's got to be about 14 years old right now.
Yeah.
And again, the same routine. Group of clones being led the opposite way down the same corridor every morning that Omega and Emery go. And another blood sample taken from Omega, put in the same spot. On that tray with all the other samples, the same security scanner in the ante room, and another omission of Omega's blood sample in the disposal, and another secret for Omega to keep that hers was discarded. And then, also in her routine, another visit to the Lurka kennel to do, among her chores, is feed the Lurka hounds.
Right.
And she makes another visit to Batcher. But this, yeah, she takes notice now, is Batcher's laying down close to the grated door, she's got a pretty deep cut in one of her front legs.
Yeah. Don't look too good.
Not at all. So she calls for the kennel keeper, who's a droid. I've heard some friends are taking notice that the body style of this droid is sort of similar to a KX series security droid, like K2SO. The head is different. But the body does kind of resemble a KX droid.
Huh. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't notice it either. It took podcast recaps and reviews and me listening to each of the newest ones over the past week as they've come out. And I thought, this is why I listen, because we all see Star Wars a little bit different. And maybe things I didn't notice that somebody else did would give me a reason when I get home from work to go jump back in and give a look and kind of see through their words that I've heard what they saw that helps me see things that they do.
Right.
Yes, that was pretty neat. His designation is K9. See what they did there? K9X1 is a kennel keeper droid. Yeah, Meg is pretty scared. She's like, that just hurt. And he says, well, I'm not a medical droid. I'm not programmed with that kind of information to be able to help her. And so Omega's pretty insistent. Well, we got to do something to help her. And K9 says, well, if she's not healed soon, she's going to be slated to be disposed of. And Omega's having none of that.
Yeah. Yeah, just because it has a cut on its leg, you're going to put it down? Come on.
Yeah, it is shown that in this early part of the Empire, especially with the Advanced Sciences Division, exactly how disposable things, and as we'll learn later, folks in the galaxy are just a disposable to them.
Yeah.
So K9 makes his way back around to the kennel away from Omega, and she takes notice on the wall behind her, there's a first aid kit. So she goes and cracks it open and looks to be, I would have to guess, it's some kind of Bacta salve. It has a little swab. She opens it up and she promises Batcher, this isn't going to hurt and I'm trying to help you, so please don't bite me. And she reaches through the gate and doesn't have any bandage of sorts. And she says maybe in Nalase's lab she can find something to bandage her up. But she gets some of that Bacta into that cut, and Batcher lets her put it on.
Right.
And she notices that Batcher notices that Omega's gentleness. And I think that spoke a good deal to Batcher, that Omega means to be a help.
Right.
So then we fast forward just a little bit to Omega back outside. She snuck over to cross her cell again, explaining that she made friends with the Lurka Hound, that she named her Batcher, and that she was hurt, and she did her best to help her. And that they need to work on a plan for escaping this place.
Right.
And Crosshair's just refusing. He's being stubborn. He's just refusing to hear. He's like, just forget about escape plans. Forget about me.
Up there.
Yeah, he's being a little bit on the rude side. He said if he did make a way to escape, that she would be the last thing he would ever be thinking of, that he would just make out on his own. And she's not buying it. She straight up calls him a liar.
Yep.
And I kind of believe her because, yeah, she says she doesn't believe it, that she wouldn't do that for him because he's her brother.
He just doesn't like to admit it. That's all.
Yeah. He ain't outwardly. I think at some parts inside right there, he's accepting it. He's just not, he ain't willing to say so.
Right.
And he does something that none of us were expecting. Because she feels like she's done. She's not arguing anymore. So she turns to walk away. And he stands up and comes to the door. And he calls her by her name.
Right.
That one hit me upside my head. Because he's never called her Omega before. He's always ever just referred to her as the kid. And right there, yeah, like I said, that one just hit me. because now he's showing that, yeah, what some of what she's been saying in the past months did speak to him. He heard what she was saying.
Yeah,
he feels like he's had some time to think about the things he's done. And maybe, well, they straight up weren't the best choices. And he thinks maybe, yeah, she needs to get out of there on her own. Don't risk anything for him. He feels that he belongs in there. This is where, exactly where I should be. All my choices led me to here. I did this to myself. Nobody else can help me with this. Just let me be. Again, yeah, she ain't having any of it. She's like, none of us belong in here. And that's the last word for that visit she leaves him with. And he doesn't go back to laying down. He watches her walk off until he can't see her anymore. Just standing there, left thinking about what she said.
Yeah.
And then we get the third showing of just routine day. Her in her cell. The drip of water from her sink.
That drip of water, oh my God. The whole episode. I was telling my wife, I'm like, would someone come in and fix that? Oh my God.
Then I would have to imagine this is the first time it might have been routine with others, but early morning, Omega's still on her bed, and the door to her quarters opens, and it ain't Emery. It's a Royal Guard commando. Not one, but two. Which surprises her, and she grabs her homemade Lula and hides it behind her back. And she said, what's this? And Emery appears in the door behind him. She says, this is a surprise inspection. It's just routine. And the commandos take the look in under her bed, around her sink, find her lunch pail, and dump it out on the bed. And then the commando that's on the farthest side of the room notices that she's hiding something behind her back. She finds the Tuca doll. And the commando holds it up and shows Emery, and she says, bring it here. And he hands it over. And Emery proceeds to tell her that personal items like these things are forbidden. You should know this.
Treating them like it's like personal attachments, personal things. That's... Immediately, I was like, she's not a Jedi. But that was just like a joke I told my wife at this point when she goes, personal things aren't allowed. And I'm like, what, like attachments for Jedis aren't allowed? But, yeah.
Yeah, Emery says she'll dispose of it, and Omega pleads with her to not. And she doesn't say it. Emery doesn't say anything after that.
Right.
She's come, let's start our day. And the commando guards walk down the corridor with them to see a very dejected look on Omega's face. Yeah, that the one thing of hope that she had was just taken away from her.
And she could just make another one. That's all.
So then we go to see Hemlock, and now I'll say, exiting that laser-gated corridor. And now I'll say, seems pleased with what her work is doing. In a chat as they walk down the corridor with Hemlock, that the Emperor should be pleased with her work, what she's been able to accomplish, but Hemlock's not very pleased with it. That they're trying to transfer blood that has a high M count into a being that will hold the results But everything that Nalase has been working on, as they transfer them to somebody else, it doesn't hold. It diminishes.
Right.
And she said, well, when the Emperor comes, we'll see if he's as pleased and kind of as forgiving as maybe I am. And then we get to see Omega pays another visit to the Lurka kennel and visits Thatcher and is caught by KX-01 saying that she shouldn't be favoring Thatcher so much because now she's kind of made her a little bit on the friendly side, which
right.
lends very well to a patrol hound being able to do its job if it's been, how's folks say it now, kind of domesticated to folks, and that she's been slated to be destroyed.
Right.
And that straight up pretty much pisses Omega off. She's like, no, you're not going to kill her. So K9 pulls out a stun baton and comes walking to Omega, and he's holding one of the control data pads, and Omega grabs it, yanks it off out of his hands. K9 starts to notify security, and Omega's got the data pad, and he's kind of chasing her around the kennel just a bit, coming to stun her with that baton, and she takes, there's some kind of heavy case that's right up above, and she activates the release on it and drops it straight on the K9. And then she picks up a stun baton and just whacks him right in the head with it, which overloads his circuitry and pretty much disables the droid.
Right.
So she hurries up and she sticks a data pad into one of the slots on the wall and opens the outdoor cage door to Thatcher's kennel and aims to set her free. She's urging her, you got to go. You can't stay here because they're going to kill you. And I'm not going to let them do that. And it seems Thatcher's become pretty friendly. She's accepted Omega as a friend now.
Yep.
It seems like she doesn't want to leave the kennel. She doesn't want to leave Omega. And she's kind of upset, but she urges Thatcher to go. She's just yelling at him, go, you need to go. So Thatcher turns around. Omega takes the harness off of her head, around her neck. Thatcher puts out into the jungle forest. And right after that, Hemlock and Emery appear. So they made it ahead of security before security could get there. And Hemlock takes notice of what Omega did. He pretty much says, I didn't think you were that heartless to kind of let a domesticated animal out into the wild where now it ain't going to be able to fend for itself since you made it friendly, which I don't think that would be the case at all. Right. Being out in the wild before the Empire showed up and kenneled these animals, I think Thatcher would still remember what it was like, what it's like out in the wild to be able to talking out of his ass.
Yeah, I don't think he's educating enough on crap like this, but yeah, they're the ones that originally captured these wild animals, put collars on them, put them in the cages, using them as watchdogs. Before that, they were out there in the wild doing their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Domesticated, but they knew how to survive.
Absolutely.
I was telling my wife the whole time he was making his speech here, I was like, I said, no, I said, Thatcher's going to be fine. I said, Thatcher's going to become part of the crew by the end of this. So.
Yeah, it sucks to what I would call in that galaxy far, far away. To me, he's kind of like momentary modern day folks that aren't familiar with what real life out in the world outside of his lab is really like.
Right.
And he even goes so far as calling her kind of naive naive kids' beliefs. And then he does spill a little bit of information that maybe he shouldn't have, that, yeah, a little while ago, one of our shuttles crashed out there, and the crew of it weren't able to survive the wildlife of Wayland.
Well, they ain't lived in the wild before.
Yes, and now that's something for later on for Omega to remember about that shuttle.
That comes back into play, obviously.
Yeah, there's... It kind of reminds Omega that sentimentality like that has no place inside those walls, and she'd do well to remember that. And Omega just stands straight up back up to him. She's like, all right, or what? So, again, he threatens her that, no, he's not going to hurt her. But he's willing to make sacrifices that if she's not willing to conform to her work there and her responsibilities that they see her as being responsible for, that he's willing to sacrifice pretty much without naming them straight out, Crosshair.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, and Mega says, well, don't do anything to him. He didn't do anything to anyone. Emery kind of tries to, maybe I should just take her back to her quarters. And Hemlock just straight up ignores Emery. So we get to back to, again, Omega's quarters. No Lula. No. She's sitting on her bed, legs folded up in front of her, head on her knees, and the door to her quarters opens. Emery comes in. And she kind of tries to plead with her, but Omega just doesn't want her there.
Right.
She just says, please, just don't. Just please go.
Yeah.
And Emery doesn't say anything. And we see her lean down. Is this she putting something down? She doesn't say a word. She looks at Omega. She stands up, turns around, goes out of the quarters. And Omega turns after she's left to see that Emery did not throw her Lula Tuca away. She did keep it, and she brought it back and left it for her. So there is some friendly feeling and sisterly between Emery has for Omega.
Yeah.
That she broke Imperial rules too, but just between the two of them. Nobody else has to know about this. Yep, Mega picks it up off the floor and back to the window. And out in the wilds, we get to see Badger, who is well and fine.
Yep.
On that crashed new class shuttle. Howling into the night, and Omega can hear her ways off in the distance.
Yep.
And that's where the storytellers end this episode.
Yep. We get the created by Dave Filoni and then the credits. But yeah, that, I really think Emery's going to be an integral part as we get further and further into this season. And never know. I still say she's gonna turn on, oh my goodness. Hey. Can't remember his name.
Hemlock?
Yeah, I think she is going to end up turning on him and seeing that, yeah, this dude isn't that great. You know, he's a bad dude. Because I don't even think she knows exactly what he's all up to. I really don't.
No, right now, none of us do. There's a lot of some really wild speculations going on. A lot of folks are just having fun with it. I'm hoping that most folks, yes, I can't remember the particular podcast that says speculate responsibly.
Yep.
Definitely encourage that. Just don't hold on to the thoughts and theories too tight to be let down if what you think is in your head. It, don't do that. Just remember to have fun with it, for sure.
Right. That's what I always say, because, yes, do I like to speculate? Yes, I just did a little bit with Emery. Things are going to turn on Hemlock. And if it ends up not being true, be upset about it. That's just what I look in the head. That's what I see happening. But yeah, cause I think the only person that has the most knowledge of what Hemlock is actually doing is Nolasap.
Oh, absolutely. Agreed.
He's been back there in that highly secured room. We don't know. And I don't think she has. I think it's just been Hemlock and Nolasay right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we don't even know what's back there yet. So.
I'm pretty certain that not even Emery Carr knows what's back there just yet.
Right. But, yeah, we will all find out when they tell us. And, yeah, after that first episode, I said this might end up being the ultimate season of Bad Batch, because, well, and like I said before, it wasn't like I didn't want to watch Bad Batch back when those first three or four episodes premiered. I just didn't. I was in that space where I was having a bad stretch. I was down. Wasn't feeling myself and didn't feel like doing anything Star Wars at all. Then, like I said, I posted about it on Twitter, which maybe I shouldn't have, but I did. And Bro from Scarif's Scuttlebutt, he did. He gave me that advice. Hey, go watch, go watch something else that you love.
Mm-hmm.
Give it a break, which I did that whole weekend. And a couple of days after that, I went back through my entire Kevin Smith film catalog, watching all his movies, having a good time watching those again, remembering how much I liked them, still laughing at all the jokes and stuff in those movies. So, yeah, that kind of brought me back to Star Wars. And even those of you that have seen his original movie, Clerks, there is a scene in there where Dante and Randall, just like us Star Wars fans do, had a conversation about the contractors on the second Death Star. Were they innocents that were killed on that Death Star because they were just contracted to do a job? But yeah, it was just so funny. And of course, there was an actual contractor in the convenience store at the time overhearing their conversation. And he came over and gave his 2 cents. So, yeah. I mean, and that kind of, yeah, I was only on Clerks at the time, but that kind of like, I was like, laughing about that. I said, yeah, it's one of my favorite scenes in this movie when they're talking about the Death Star. Because why? Because I love Star Wars. But, yeah. And as I went through Kevin Smith's movies, I kind of had forgotten. He does make a lot of Star Wars references in most of his movies.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, that was one of my favorite scenes in Clerks is when they're the Death Star 2 contractors. So, but yeah, that got me back to wanting to watch Star Wars again. And was like, yep. Told my wife, I said, okay, I said, whenever you're ready, I said, I'm ready to watch these first 4 episodes, because at the time the 4th episode had already premiered, and I was like, all right, so let's do this. So sat down and watched them, and by the time we were done, I'm like, damn. And I said, this season's going to be awesome. So yeah. And of course, my wife and I being dog people, I like fell in love with Batcher right away. I was like, yeah, I said, he's going to become part of the crew. I said, at the end of the first episode, I said, they showed him alive. They showed him. He's still alive. He's going to at that point, I said, he's going to be part of their escape. I said, in some way, he's going to help them escape. And when we get to it, we'll see if I'm right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. Everybody has different low spots that we go through, Jeff. I, over the past 3 weeks, sort of had a teeny tiny little bit of a low one for myself. Still got my back-to-back listening through all of my days. Just kind of stopped posting in the Twitterverse, kind of sharing who I'm listening to. I get the likes whenever I put them up, that whoever it is that I've heard and kind of shared out, I get, not hunting or fishing for any kind of likes. I'm grateful for anything that I get back from anybody, and even more grateful for anybody that choose to follow me for whichever reason they do.
Right.
Yeah, it seems to kind of might have reached a little bit of a limit right now where I've done my best to try to help somebody else out to go give a listen to, and they seem to be the only ones that appreciate that I shared that out. So I just kind of keeping my playlist to myself for now. I hear all the thoughts, I hear all the opinions, and sometimes I'm yelling back at somebody for reaching for a thing that they think they know that's going to come. Don't do that. What you said and what I heard was an expectation. Just don't hold on to that. Yeah, but I'm still listening. And still having a lot of fun doing it. Also, pre-recording, Jeff mentioned he's going to get to go jump back into broadening out his podcast playlist again. And you were in that low spot. Yeah, I kind of suggested, I thought a little bit of a remedy was to have some of those folks with their fun and shenanigans.
Yeah.
That maybe kind of keep that love of listening to other folks' thoughts and opinions and some of the goofiness and fun that they carry on with.
Right, yeah. And I did listening to you too during that time. The one podcast that I knew that I could listen to that didn't take themselves too seriously and always had fun with Star Wars and usually talks about the obscure things from Star Wars is Blast Points.
Mm-hmm.
I went back and listened to some old episodes of Blast Points, laughing with Jason and Gabe, and yeah, that certainly helped me too. And I was like, yes, I wish, not that, you know, the other podcasts I listen to aren't, you know, as good as they are, because they are, but Jason and Gabe just have that effect on me that makes me remember, hey, Star Wars is fun. You got to have fun with it. Because there are Star Wars podcasts you go and listen to that they kind of take themselves really seriously. And when they start talking about their, you know, feelings and opinions on things, yeah, like all of us, we take them, you know, seriously and we hold on to them. But some of them get to the point where they're like arguing back and forth instead of just trying to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to steer clear of those. So, yeah.
Now, Jason and Gabe do, even though they're not regulars to me and haven't been for some time, but they do definitely remind folks to, when you're sitting and watching it, at whatever age you're sitting at, to watch it with the eyes of the little kid in you.
Yeah.
And just take it for exactly what the storyteller's telling you with the story, where it might be going, maybe some of the fun little Easter egg things that are touching back to other different parts in that galaxy far, far away. Yep, just sit. When you're sitting right there, that's your sweet happy spot.
Yep. Yep. And I guess one last thing I wanted to say is remember, Star Wars was originally made for kids between 7 and 12, so just keep that in mind. And I know people are saying, oh, yeah, but nowadays they're making it for us. No, they're still making it for kids between 7 and 12. Hell, I've started watching again because I noticed there was new episodes. Young Jedi Tales. I find those so fun. So I'm still watching the kiddie stuff of Star Wars as well. So, you know, just have fun with it. Watch, you know, watch the shows that you like. Ignore the ones that don't appeal to you as much. So, and we all have those. Even I have those. Andor is one of mine. I've rewatched it. I've watched the entire series of Andor 3 times and it's still not grabbing me. So I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but it's just not hitting me. I mean, I love Rogue One, the movie, but the series isn't hitting it for me just yet. Maybe when season 2 comes out, we'll see. We'll see. But yeah.
Well, as far as episode 1 Bad Batch is, we absolutely definitely did it, Jeff.
Oh, yeah. We knocked that one out. And next week, we'll be going over Path Unknown. And if you want, they're just a tad shorter. It's all up to you if you want to try to tackle 2 at a time or just keep with the 1. I'm fine with just going over 1 at a time because there's a lot in these, you know, less than half hour episodes to talk about.
Yep. Let's see. I'm going to reach back into, I think it was 2 or 3 days ago, as a podcast recommendation from my library will be Yubcast.
Oh, yeah.
That's Matt and Jamie, who are, I want to say they're a few years younger than us. They're the very, very tail end of Gen X.
Okay. Yes, they are.
Matt is the one that runs the Star Wars Twitterverse account. And they, I would have to second, they're not the only, but to me, the way they go, they call themselves, they are the Star Wars animation podcast who covers all things Star Wars animation.
They're the only Star Wars animation podcast I listen to, let's put it that way. So.
There is one other that's been going quite a while. I think they started about the same time, and that would be Rebel Cells, who are part of the Thunderquack podcast network, who Wampus Lair is now a proud part of.
Yep. And I'm happy for Carl and Jason that they, you know, were able to be a part of them, because the only other podcast I listened to from Thunder Quacks was The Saga Continues. And I still listen to it, guys.
Yep.
But I never got into Rebel Cells. And then Yubcast came along and I'm like, oh, here's a Star Wars podcast about animation. And I started listening to it thinking that, you know, this was the first one. But apparently, you know, they weren't, but it's the only one I've listened to so far, and they do a good job, so.
Yep, and they come at it with their own brand of shenanigans too.
Yep.
So there we go. There's a small little crossover from both Jeff and I. For if you're looking for some Star Wars goodness and fun and shenanigans talking about animation, give them a listen.
Yep. So we'll be back here next week with episode 2 of season 3 of The Bad Batch, Paths Unknown. And unless you have anything else to add, RFB?
All glory to the Galactic Empire.
And as always, until next time.
I have spoken.
Give the evacuation code signal.
RFB and I would like to thank you for joining us here in the cafe. Life is all about passions. Thank you for lending us your ear while we shared all of ours. You can follow the Blue Milk Cafe Facebook group, Blue Milk Cafe Pod. And remember, blue milk, it does a body good.